Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. San Antonio is one of the most economically segregated cities in the U.S. Thousands of people who live in San Antonio's Latino-majority South Side have only one hospital with 100 beds. The only other 300-plus bed hospital on the South Side, Texas Vista Medical Center, closed in May 2023. It will be another 2 years before a county-built hospital will be available to South Side San Antonio residents. Today, we're talking with three women dedicated to advancing health outcomes to the South Side through the nonprofit Center for Health Equity in South Texas, or CHEST. San Antonio District 4 City Councilwoman Adriana Rocha Garcia and District 3 Councilwoman Phyllis Villagran represent the South Side. Dr. Lisa Ochoa is a vascular surgeon and the founder of the SAVE Clinic, the San Antonio Vascular and Endovascular Clinic, located on San Antonio's South Side. The SAVE Clinic is a sponsor of Texas Public Radio. Dr. Ochoa says she's seen firsthand the need in the community for accessible health care.
I am a vascular surgeon, and so as a vascular surgeon, I take care of all the arteries and veins in the body. And the reason that's significant is I am that person that sees those end-stage complications of chronic diseases like diabetes, high blood pressure, heart failure, chronic kidney disease. And all these chronic conditions end up with complications such as diabetic amputations, heart attacks, strokes, people needing to be on dialysis. And so what happens on the South Side when we have lack of access to primary care, preventative care, and even specialty care, these chronic conditions accumulate in people's bodies and lives and end up in these complications. And what I have been seeing on the South Side, complications that usually happen in our 70, 80-year-olds are now happening in our 30, 40-year-olds. So uncontrolled type 2 diabetes that leads to peripheral arterial disease, bad circulation to the legs, chronic kidney disease, heart disease, ending up with these complications earlier in life than we expected. And when one of these members of our community loses their leg, it doesn't just affect them and their families, it affects their entire community. They now can't go to work. They now need the help from all their family to support them, to get them to rehab, to hopefully get them walking again with a prosthetic. And so what I've been seeing is that this is happening more and more, and it has not changed. And I believe it's due to lack of access to care, lack of access to preventative medicine, lack of access to quality education, and what we call the lifestyle environment or the zip code to live in that dictates these outcomes.
And I think we need to go back a little bit and explain what the South Side of San Antonio is, both historically, ethnically. Phyllis and Adriana, both of you represent the greater South Side of San Antonio. Phyllis, can you maybe give us a breakdown of maybe people who are new to San Antonio, aren't listening from San Antonio? Describe it for us.
So the South Side of San Antonio wasn't originally part of the original San Antonio footprint. They were smaller towns. We talk about Harlandale, Sunny Slope, Pecan Valley. They were their own little communities. And what happened is they got annexed in to the city of San Antonio. They were German communities, Czech communities, and Mexican American communities in that area. And they were all living together, and then they got annexed in. And what we saw historically is San Antonio proper, or the original San Antonio, felt like because they were annexed in, they could kind of dictate what was happening there, and they didn't have the representation. So what we saw was a lot of redlining for that area. We saw a lot of segregation. If you go further south, we have St. Philip of Jesus on one end and then St. Henry's at the other, because one was for the Polish population and the Mexican population, and the other was for the German population. And we see this throughout San Antonio. So as they were annexed in, as they were redlined, certain services didn't make their way into South San Antonio. And what happened is we did have the, you know, doctors at the corner and things like that. But as the healthcare industry and system changed, we didn't see that coming to South San Antonio. So it's a proud community. It's a very diverse and culturally rich community. And it's very much a community where they talk to their neighbors and they go on their neighbors' referrals in terms of who they visit and what they need. And what we found and why I work with Dr. Ochoa is because we're not talking about our healthcare or our mental health in the southern sector of San Antonio.
Well, Adriana, the redlining, the carryover of it extends into today. San Antonio is still considered one of the most economically segregated cities in the country. Can you explain why the South Side, despite there being already establishment of more businesses of manufacturing, why it continues to lag?
One of the additional things that I feel has held the South Side back is the educational attainment levels. And so when you think of that red line that happened, when you think of the income levels and the ability of the community to have access to quality education, it's been lacking. It's been lacking for decades. And so we know that the school districts, for instance, in the southern area don't have as many resources as some of the school districts in the northern area. And so by no fault of their own, a child is born into a zip code and they already start off a little bit behind on the educational level. Now, when you think about education as the basis for health, as the basis for economic upward mobility, you realize that they are behind on multiple fronts. And so, for instance, with the health and the education, we have so many grandparents that are raising their grandchildren right now in the South Side. That's common. And so if one grandparent needs some additional assistance, that child is likely going to not go to school to take their grandparent to the doctor, to take care of them around the house, help around the house, and try to miss as many days as possible without actually getting into trouble, if you will. But then they miss that. They miss that opportunity to be in school, to be learning. And that has perpetuated this cycle of intergenerational poverty, the lack of the access to education. And so as we continue to invest in infrastructure, which we know is clearly needed, we also need to continue to invest in our education so that there is upward mobility. That's the only way that we're going to be able to affect the trajectory of this entire part of the city.
Well, Lisa, two steps forward, one step back. There was a closure recently of a pretty major hospital in the South Side of San Antonio. Can you tell us more about how that's affected the community?
Yes. So when Texas Vista, what was previously known as Southwest General, shut down in May of 2023, I can tell you it immediately affected even my patient population as a vascular surgeon. And so as a vascular surgeon in the South Side, unfortunately, the end stage complication I do is diabetic amputations. And within the first 3 to 4 months after that hospital closure, in my own practice, I noticed that I was doing more diabetic amputations in people less than 50 years old. There were 3 times more than the same time period the previous year. And so lack of access to care for infections led to, I think, people having complications that were not reversible by the time they were finally in a hospital system. And so it was at that time when that hospital closed that we, all of us, came together and said, we have to do something because this is dangerous for this community and it's going to lead to even worse of an epidemic of the complications that we see. And our initial thought was, well, we need more hospital beds. And where that is completely true, because right now, currently, we have only 100 acute care beds, only 70 are really for medicine, the rest are maternal beds for over 700,000 people on the South Side. We have over 4,000 beds for about 1.5 million on the North Side. And that discrepancy and disparate care is felt right now. So when we decided that we needed to do something, we realized we need another hospital and we need more acute care beds, but we have to really address the root cause of why this is happening. And the root cause is what you heard from my two councilwomen on the history of San Antonio and how we got here, which means that we actually have to invest in each of these communities and each of these zip codes. And so the nonprofit that we have started called CHEST, we are wanting to focus on 3 main pillars, one being education and health careers. We want to be able to partner with our Southside school districts to begin to streamline students being exposed to health careers, whether it's a doctor or nurse, or a medical assistant and coding and billing from middle school and on. And how do we work to collaborate with all the school districts and make that happen? Healthcare. And that means acute care beds, clinics, training more nurses and doctors, getting more people, more resources to the South Side. And the nice part is we have a good nidus of excitement happening with UHS building a hospital there, a clinic there, and that's going to be a good starting point.
About when will that be completed?
My understanding is early 2027 for the hospital.
So still a ways.
Still a ways. In the interim, I know they're building a clinic, and the Institute for Public Health will be there as well. And so it's going to be a transition, but within this transition, we are partnering with them to figure out how do we integrate what's on the south side now with that growth. So when that hospital's built, we're ready with those partnerships and collaborations with high schools, with community colleges, and with all the school districts in those areas. And then the last sector is what we call life expectancy. All those things that affect healthcare outcomes from education, health literacy, transportation, housing, air pollution, all those things that affect people's lives and their communities. And so we're going to have work groups in these three sectors to figure out how we use current assets. Right now, we have a lot of organizations and nonprofits and small businesses that work in each of these sectors already. And we want to bring them together to figure out how we unified can get to the goal of finally changing the fact that lifespan varies 20 years north and south of San Antonio.
My residents are 1 minute away from losing hope. And in this particular case, they're literally 11, 12 minutes away from the closest hospital on a good traffic day. And so imagine if there's something really, really complicated. And so that takes away from the proximity of where they would have received care otherwise. Now, when this happened initially, I got the commitment of the city manager, and he was able to add an additional support unit, if you will, of EMS so that they could respond a little bit faster. That doesn't help on a bad traffic day. And I tell everybody, people can't control when they're having a heart attack, for instance. They can't say, wait just another 10 minutes because I think that it'll be better traffic in 10 minutes, et cetera. And so we don't think about this, but also the residents that are the ones that benefited from the hospital and who would benefit from something like what we're working on are the ones who can't drive very far. They actually don't even have transportation sometimes. So sometimes some of their neighbors, who are usually some elderly neighbors that are helping one another out, they don't want to drive on highways. They can't drive on highways. They're scared to drive on highways. So you could literally just take Sar Zamora down and take a quick turn on Barlight before, and there was a hospital. Now we can say, well, you're taking military, you can take a ride on Sar Zamora and you'll be at the new hospital, but that's in 2 years. The other thing that I don't think that people realize is, and I have heard this in general from some of the people that are supporting students in particular, is the need for some additional mental health investment in the area. And so those psych beds that we lost at Texas Vista, they already were stressed with the closure of the NICS a decade before. And so we've never really fully compensated, if you will, for the need of mental health in the area. And by the way, after COVID, there was an increase in that need. So we are behind. We are trying to catch up. I've said this before, that for the South Side, it's going to take decades to catch up on just basic level services. And so that's what I hear. I'm really happy that the superintendents want to be a part of the solution, want to create this talent pipeline management, if you will, but also that UTSA, UT Health Science Center, we're working to identify a student to lead a survey in the community so that we could see exactly what the community needs are. So talking to those community members firsthand is critical. I hear them at the supermarket. I hear them at church, in my office, wherever, in passing. But we need to get to as many folks as possible to give us that direct feedback. There's going to take those surveys at local taquerias, washaterias, I mean, the Sam's Club, whatever it is. We need to get to them and we need to ask them what their needs are. And we're grateful for the partnerships that we have been able to establish so far.
Well, Phyllis, how is CHEST already making a difference? Lisa just went through a lot of the goals for it. What is actually being done? Have you been able to approach schools already? Have they already been able to implement a lot of these plans? We are kind of in a very awkward place politically right now. Everything is in flux and in chaos, some people might say. How can you make people who are living in another part of the city that does not have that sense of inequity in their communities, how do you make them care about the greater South Side of San Antonio? How do you make them care that what affects the South Side affects all of San Antonio?
So we've started meeting with the stakeholders and having those meetings to kind of see where are resources, what do we do? I'm in communication with the superintendent on many issues at Harlandale and Southside Independent School District, and working with SAISD, which has a lot of council members that it represents, and then East Central, because those are the school districts. The charter schools, I've looked at them as individually to tell them about health and the story. And for me, I had a health scare last year. It's been a year anniversary this time, and it's telling the story and then making sure that they understand what actions we're taking. We're hearing a lot of stories, and now we're trying to say, okay, where do we move from there? We do have CastMed, we do have STEM, and a lot of the schools that can lead to these careers that Dr. Ochoa talked about. So I think that's kind of having the conversations. We're coming together as a group to take meetings in terms of, okay, who's doing what priority? What action can we take there? Who's already in the community servicing those with asthma, even, you know, dental care, providing services, and how can we highlight them as is going to be, I think, the next step for me as a council person and for everyone else. So we're trying to tell the story and then bring those that are really interested together. And we have the board ready to go with CHEST. And hopefully with that, we can really see this coming to the school districts.
Phyllis Villagran is District 3 Councilwoman for the City of San Antonio. She and her colleague, District 4 Councilwoman Adriana Rocha Garcia, represent the south side of San Antonio. Also joining us today is Dr. Lisa Ochoa, a vascular surgeon and the founder of the SAVE Clinic, the San Antonio Vascular and Endovascular Clinic. We're talking about the efforts of CHEST, the Center for Health Equity in South Texas, to mitigate health inequity in South San Antonio. When we come back, misperceptions exist in the healthcare industry about the insurability of Southside residents.
It's very similar to thinking there's not the need, they don't have the budget or the money. They do. They just need people that they can trust and believe that care about them.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. San Antonio is the seventh largest city in the U.S. An example of its continued growth is its growing healthcare footprint. Hospitals and clinics crowd the city's busy medical center area, and more hospitals and healthcare facilities are being constructed in some of the city's rapidly growing areas to the north and west. Where does that leave some of the historically underrepresented areas of the city? A 300-plus bed hospital closed on San Antonio's south side in 2023. A smaller 100-bed hospital remains. A new, larger hospital under construction there won't be completed until 2027. Many residents of the south side don't have access to transportation and can't make a minutes-long drive north to their nearest downtown hospital. Vascular surgeon Dr. Lisa Ochoa and San Antonio City Councilwomen Phyllis Villagran and Adriana Rocha Garcia are involved in the development of the nonprofit Center for Health Equity in South Texas, or CHEST. Dr. Ochoa says convincing private and county hospitals to invest in a historically underserved Latino community is a challenge.
We all went into medicine to help people. And there is no better fulfillment than helping those who are truly in need. Another misperception, I think, from the medical community is that there's a lot of people on the south side that are uninsured. And when you look at a zip code map of the uninsured, actually majority still have insurance. 70 to 75%, even the lowest zip codes with the lowest amount of insurance, it's still a majority of them. And what I have learned as a surgeon on the south side is I would see perhaps an uninsured patient in the hospital, and when I paired them with a navigator, a healthcare navigator, who didn't just try to get them a plan, but sat and talked to them, figure out what their finances are, figure out what their medical needs are, that before they were discharged from the hospital, they were put on some kind of plan from the Affordable Care Act or Medicaid or with any of the other resources like CareLink or Methodist Healthcare Ministries. There are a lot of more population in the South Side that are insurable if we just put those resources there to help them get insured. And so there's no doubt that finances probably play a role in all of this. And so the message I want to the private hospitals is that there's a need. There's economic development happening on the South Side. And so there's more and more people there. And from both an economic development standpoint and the need standpoint and fulfilling what your mission is, this is the place where private hospitals need to come help and support these communities.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I think if we look at the growth on the South Side, they are insurable. Our residents are insurable. There is a need. There are plenty of pensioners living on the South Side. It's just that the healthcare industry has not, I feel, done their homework. It's very similar to thinking there's not the need, they don't have the budget or the money. They do. They just need people that they can trust and believe that care about them. My mother still goes to her GP on the West Side that she has for about 50 years. Probably because she trusts him. And if you can come into the community, then the community believes that you care, they will visit you and they will ask for services. And I think that that's one thing that we need to see is that there's the need. It's just that it has to build up the trust. It's the same thing with if you have that reputation. I have residents that we tell them we have the Baptist hospital. They're like, no, I only go to the Methodist or I only go to Christus. And it's one of those things that bring in someone new so that they can trust them and build that relationship there. The other is having those conversations that your health matters. And I, because I'm in the middle of it, in the thick of it with my treatment, I run into people along the way that care and want to be helpful. If you run into someone that doesn't and isn't helpful, you have a choice to say no and get a second opinion or go somewhere else. And I think that's where we want to, with this in terms of our education and our health careers, empower our residents and our people to say, no, I felt disrespected. I felt like you weren't listening. I'm going to take my business somewhere else.
Well, that gets me thinking, Adriana, there are many people on San Antonio South Side who are living here with no legal status. So not only are they uninsured, they're uninsurable. And right now, there's a climate of fear among the immigrant community, and many of them are not going out. And even as reluctant as they may have been at first to seek health care, it's even less so now. So how do you reach that community?
Yeah, and it's going to take grassroots efforts, going to the taquerias, going to the washaterias, connecting with them, letting them know that they can't live in fear because they will literally not survive, especially when it comes to healthcare needs. They have to know that there is people like us that are championing for them, that are just caring about their healthcare needs, et cetera. One of the things that we also have to focus on is the health literacy. It is critical. And so how do we make sure that they know that they're able to learn how to take care of themselves? Preventive care is important. The other aspect is that cultural competency. Some of my residents will go to one particular clinic because of that cultural competency. They understand that the doctor's going to tell them, well, you shouldn't eat tacos three times a day, maybe once every other day, and they get it. And so it goes back to that health literacy and that prevention. And so it does take going on one-on-one and letting them know there's doctors across the city who they have taken an oath to save your life. And ultimately, that's what you need to do. You need to go take care of yourself and come to all of us, right? Like reach out to someone that you know, reach out to your churches, reach out to nonprofits that are out there that are doing grassroots. The best thing that has ever been created, in my opinion, are community health workers. And the best use, I feel, for this population that we're talking about in particular has been the community health workers because they have this trusted relationship. It takes weeks, months to have that relationship come to fruition and say, oh, maybe I'll give them a chance. And so that's what it's going to take. It's literally knocking on doors and letting people know that these opportunities are available for them to take care of their health care. But again, that cultural competency, oh goodness, it gets us sometimes. I'll give an example, Meals on Wheels. There's a month of all of the foods that they're going to bring every single day. And some of those are great. Like, I've seen tamales on them, right? And enchiladas. And so, but then there's other things that, like, my parents could never pronounce. And then, by the way, my mom's like, oh, pero necesita sal. It needs salt, right? I'm like, oh, goodness, right? And it's that frame of mind just reminding them, hey, you know what? They're trying to protect you. You don't need anything that's not already in it. But it takes that type of work and just that effort, just continued rehashing the message.
And just briefly, Lisa, I'm sure you've encountered some of the, she was talking about the cultural competency and, I mean, generations upon generations of redlining and government mistrust still carries over. And so how are you in your practice countering that?
You know, cultural competency and building trust with your patients is vitally important. And so when we build this new hospital and we want to recruit more doctors, more clinics to the South Side, we want those who understand our community, who understand the culture, and who really care about these patients. I say that because the reality is not everybody is. And so the way we do it within our practice is I have actually trained and educated my entire staff, from the person that picks up the phone, to the front desk, to our ultrasound techs, to our medical assistants, our nurses, that we are going to treat everybody with respect, and we are here to service them. And so it's nothing better when I see a patient for the first time, and by the time I've walked into the room, they've touched all these other touch points, and they tell me, wow, your team really cares about me. And I, for me, it's easy, because now my staff has built this trust. So medical care is not just the doctor. Medical care is every single person that touches that patient, which is why creating those pipelines from the South Side, my dream is that we have all the medical assistants, medical receptionists, doctors, nurses, techs trained from the South Side that already speak Spanish, that already understand the culture, come back and take care of their community. And that's what we hope for with CHEST, is to create those pipelines and create that workforce that is going to be culturally competent to take care of their community.
How can people listening get involved with CHEST, Phyllis?
I think the one thing is to reach out to us via text or email or on social media and let us know that you heard this and that you want to get involved. And then we will let you know what's next. Come out to our events, visit with the Metro Health workers when you see them out at the public events and tell them that you heard about this. And then we're hoping, as we get the board together, to unveil specific CHEST-specific events and programs. So I think key for us, and that's why I think they invited two councilwomen to be part, is because we have got the communications out there. So please reach out and let us know that you've heard and you want to get involved, because we're creating that kind of database and list to keep people posted on what we're doing next.
We just need ideas. And so we are thinking of as many things as possible. But if you have an idea, we've been thinking about making a health corridor, if you will, a healthcare incentive zone, like anything that you can think of outside the box. Like, we're ready and willing to listen.
And last, there's a very lowly developed website called mychest.org. But on that website is a place that you can sign up with your name, your email, and tell us what you're interested in. Tell us which one of these sectors or these work groups you'd be interested in participating in, to bring your ideas. I mean, this is what we realize. We already have people on the ground that do this day in and day out. And we want CHEST to be able to convene all those groups, all those organizations, so that we can catalyze on the outcomes.
Dr. Lisa Ochoa is a vascular surgeon and the founder of the SAVE Clinic, the San Antonio Vascular and Endovascular Clinic, a sponsor of Texas Public Radio. We're also talking with San Antonio District 4 City Councilwoman Adriana Rocha Garcia and District 3 Councilwoman Phyllis Villagran. They both represent the South Side of San Antonio. Thanks for joining me today on Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.